This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Get ready to win big this NFL season with a VSIN Pro subscription. Sign up now for our football special before the end of July and get full VSIN Pro access from now through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of just $175. That saves you nearly 50% off the monthly price. With VSIN Pro, you're going to gain access to our daily best bets, exclusive betting splits data, proven betting systems, and analysis from professional handicappers, 24/7 video content, and our all-new special edition betting guides, like our new NFL betting guide packed with detailed team, division, and conference analysis, plus season win totals, features, props, and awards, and best bets. Our expert insights and in-depth coverage will keep you informed and help you make smarter bets throughout the season. Do not wait. Sign up before the end of July. Get full VSIN Pro access through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of $175. Sign up now at VSIN.com/subscribe. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Back alongside Joe Cirillo. I almost did it. Joe Cirillo. Joe Cirillo. But wait, see the Italian. The Italian, right? Joe Cirillo. But what's the Italian pronunciation?
Joey Cirillo. And if you want to hear more Italian, you might hear it when we get to our top five movie segment at the end of the show.
Is that a tease?
I might be speaking a little Italian during that segment.
I cannot wait. Could you do a gangster movie if they asked you to and said, like, can you speak Italian?
Yeah.
You could do it.
Absolutely. And I'm not by any means saying I'm fluent, because I'm not. I grew up in a household where the only Italian we really spoke were the bad words. I never actually learned the language to get to the point of being conversational until college, when I took it as an elective for 2 years. But if they gave me a script, yeah, I'd be able to knock it out of the park, frankly.
Joe Cirillo. How'd I do?
Cirillo. Giuseppe Cirillo.
I can't get it. Let's welcome into the program Josh Moody, former NFL quarterback, and of course did a great job at LSU back in the day. Joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Josh, thanks for joining us. We got a lot to get to, a lot of SEC football. It's a new conference. I know back in your day, this is not the expanded version of the SEC that we see today. Josh, do you like this, by the way, that we have this expansion in these super conferences?
Absolutely love it. And there's some things I don't like about college football, and I'm glad to join you guys today. But I do like the way that things are kind of stacking up for the conference that I played in, with Oklahoma and Texas coming into play. Man, this means more, marquee matchups. I think when you get, Georgia having to go to Austin and play at Texas, and Oklahoma, going to LSU and playing in Tiger Stadium. Those are matchups that we've never seen in those particular arenas, except for maybe in playoff type scenarios. So I think it just adds up another dimension. When you talk about rivalry games now in the SEC, you think about the Iron Bowl and the Egg Bowl, but now you got Red River rivalry inside the conference, and Texas is playing Texas A&M again. And those are some of the good things that are going to come out of this. And like I said, there are some things that are happening in college football, as you know, and everybody else knows, with the NIL deals and money, to these, happening all over the place for these players in the transfer portal. Those are some things that really scare me about college football. But I think when you look at the slate of games and the magnitude of some of these games, boy, people are going to get super excited, and they're going to forget about all that other stuff and latch on to some of these great atmosphere, stadium games that are going to happen and home and home type stuff that we haven't seen before, which would be fun.
All right, Joe. Josh already gets the vote of approval from me, because I was kind of down on it, and now he's got me hyped up for all these new rivalries.
Right? You can't wait to see the Sooners.
Now I want to see them all.
Stadium.
Absolutely.
Josh, man, this is fun having you on. I mean, you would come on my college radio show all the time back in the day. Now we're in the big leagues. This is a blast, man. So thank you for hopping on. I want to talk about your old coach, Nick Saban, because SEC media days are going on right now. And Saban caught a lot of flack for not putting his Crimson Tide in the SEC championship game. He predicted Georgia, Texas. It's hard to go against those two. They're the two favorites right now in the SEC. Yeah. Who do you see winning this conference? Is it the favorite, the Bulldogs at 2-1, or is it someone who may have a little more value who could sneak in there?
The thing about Georgia is they got to go to Texas and play in the regular season. And then like Nick Saban announced the other day, they would play again in that scenario, which would be tough to beat a team twice. But Georgia's stockpiled, as we know, and are favorites to win the entire national championship. They also go to Ole Miss, which is a tough road game because Ole Miss is getting better and better every year with Lane Kiffin, and they got Jackson Dart and the quarterback there that's going to play at the next level. I think Ole Miss presents a lot of problems for a lot of teams, especially defensively, because Lane can move the ball. He's a play-calling machine offensively, but so is Sarkisian at Texas. And I think that's why Saban gave Texas the nod to play in the big game at the end of the year in Atlanta would be Sarkisian, the quarterback, Quinn Ewers. They've got a backup in Arch Manning that is very probably capable of leading that team if something happened to Quinn Ewers. And the SEC is now going to be like the NFL every week. It's going to be tough when we talk about
yeah. that
across the board, but you better have a backup quarterback that can deliver. And I think Texas does, you know, they're stockpiled at that position and in that quarterback room with Arch backing up Quinn Ewers. So I do like those two teams. Bama with a new coach, a lot of transfers. They're going to, you know, kind of wait to see, you know, how that's going to pan out. I think their one loss over under total in Vegas is 9.5 when you got Georgia at 10.5. Georgia's always had problems with Nick Saban coach Bama teams, but because Nick Saban's not there anymore, Kirby Smart, you got to give him the edge over everybody in the conference. And I like Georgia to win it all if they don't lose Carson Beck to injury, their quarterback.
All right, Josh, you sold me on the conference expansion. Now, can you sell me on the expansion of the college football playoff to 12? Because I think the myth is this gives everybody a chance, right? Does it really? Or does it just help the bigger boys make sure, hey, they could lose two and still get in this thing?
Yeah, the thing is, it's what's going to be fun is it's like in the College World Series, right? You get eight teams, and you mm-hmm. saw four ACC, four SEC. And I think that a lot of that is going to happen because the SEC strength of schedule, the power of the conference, and then you've got, of course, the Big Ten and the strength of schedule and the power of the conference. You're going to see more teams come from those divisions that don't win the division, and maybe that second, third, and fourth team in that division still get opportunities. And what's crazy about it is at the end of last year, we saw Georgia, of course, lose to Bama. They don't get in the playoff, and then they go boat race Florida State in the arms. And it's like Georgia's the best team in the country.
Right.
At the end of the year, they were healthy. They weren't when they lost that last game, but they had a month prepared for Florida State and hammered a team. Now, Florida State was injured, and their quarterback was down, but they made them look. I went to the ball game. It was 50-7 at half or 50-3 at half. It wasn't even a close matchup. I'm like, Georgia would have been favored in a neutral environment against anybody last year. And that's even, you know, against any of those playoff teams. So I think, and they got left out. So I think this is the situation. There's going to be situations like that that are happening left and right. And I think those fifth through eight teams, and like a team like LSU, and I talk about LSU not only because I went there, but they can beat anybody on any given Saturday. And you're going to have teams like that that can rise up, like an A&M that could rise up and beat a Georgia at any time if Georgia has an off week. So I like this format a lot. I think it gives everybody an opportunity. I think teams like Oregon going over into the Big 12, maybe they don't win the conference, but they're the second best team in the conference at the end of the year to Ohio State this year. That's my prediction. And I think, you know, having them in the playoff scenario with a Dillon Gabriel kid that is going to break the all-time passing record in college football if he stays healthy this year and all-time passing yards, give him a chance to play in a big atmosphere game, and you never know what can happen. So I love that there's more games. It goes longer into the January. I love all that, man, because I love college football just like you guys do.
Josh, I'm glad you brought up your LSU Tigers and also Dillon Gabriel in the same breath there, because I want to look at this Heisman leaderboard. And there is no clear favorite. Like, everyone coming into last season thought Caleb was going to repeat. He was a really short favorite. Right now, your favorites, Carson Beck and Dillon Gabriel, are plus 800. But if you go down the list a little bit, Garrett Nussmeier getting the chance to start for your Tigers, 22-1. There's some really good value there. Can you make a case for him? What are we going to see from this kid? Who do you like for the Heisman Trophy?
Yeah, I love him. I think he stayed around. He's paid his dues. A lot of kids transfer if they don't get playing time. And, you know, it's a gamble because you never know at the end of the day when your time comes, if there's not another transfer or five-star, when you're at a program like LSU that will come in and potentially compete with you. It's like Jaden Daniels did at LSU, or like even Joe Burrow came in and took someone's position at LSU when he transferred in from Ohio State. So when you're in a five-star program, you and you're a quarterback or in any position, really, all they're trying to do is stockpile the position as much as they can. I mean, look at what Lane Kiffin's done at Ole Miss. He's got two or three guys that are big time starters. Walker Howard, who's going to back up Jackson Dart, was a five-star guy, right? Well, Nussmeier backed up Jaden Daniels. He was a five-star guy a couple of years ago. And so he's paid his dues. I really like, he's not going to be the runner that Jaden Daniels is, but he throws the football. He's a coach's son, like Joe Burrow. His dad has been a coach forever. He grew up in football. He understands the game, and he's going to get it to the right guy. And we got skilled players out the wazoo. We got two rounders on the offensive line, too, which is going to really solidify what he can do. So I think I really like Nussmeier. I don't have him winning the Heisman. I don't even know if I got him in New York.
Thank you, Josh. Great stuff. LSU, by the way, plus $1.20 to make the college football playoff. Thanks for joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. We were talking big.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
We begin hour number two of Sharp Money. Joe Serralo, Dave Ross coming at you here from the D in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. What a pleasure it always is to welcome back. I like to call him the mayor of Boston. He is Dan Vreeland. You can follow him on X as I do at Gumby Vreeland. Does a great job with the Sports Gambling Podcast, Cage Side Press, host of Top Turtle MMA, and the Gambling Podcast. Dan, great to see you, my friend. You are the hardest working man in MMA. We've got a couple things to get to. One, this weekend, we've got a pretty intriguing main event here with Amanda Lemos against Verna Jandiroba. Jandiroba's been the type of fighter that you and I normally like to back, but do we like her in the favorites role here in the main event, potentially five rounds, or do you look to the Amanda Lemos side here at plus $1.14, maybe a sleeping dog here?
So I am a little bit bummed that she didn't wind up the underdog here. I thought the title challenger, Amanda Lemos, for sure was going to be the favorite. And then the line posted, and obviously it's not what Verna Jandiroba backers like. But with that being said, I'm still having a tough time picking against her here, mostly just because if you watch the beginning of that Amanda Lemos versus Mackenzie Dern fight, Mackenzie Dern had her down very early in the fight. She had her up against the cage. She had tabled the leg. She had made it basically so Amanda Lemos had to ride out the first round on the mat. And not that Mackenzie Dern isn't a great grappler. I think she's a highly rated grappler. She's got great jiu-jitsu, some of the greatest jiu-jitsu in the strawweight division. But I actually don't rate her wrestling all that high. In fact, if you want to go back to her fight with Verna Jandiroba, Jandiroba stuffed all of her takedowns and scored on all of her own. So Jandiroba, I think, has a wrestling advantage here against Amanda Lemos that I think people might even be underrating a little bit in this fight.
So, Dan, when you look at that board that just popped up there on the screen, the closest thing we have to a pick'em this weekend is in that flyweight division between Cody Durden and Bruno Silva. Who gets your edge in that fight?
I love the spot here for Bruno Silva. And he's dipped into being an underdog a couple of times, you know, into the plus money a couple of times during the week. So keep your eye on that line. But I really love this spot for Bruno Silva. And the reason is if you look at Cody Durden's last three losses, every single one of them has come by submission. And not that Bruno Silva doesn't have big hands. And, you know, he obviously won his last fight with a choke, but like, he's known for his hands, but the thing is that when he decides to turn this into a grappling match, or when Cody Durden decides to turn this into a grappling match, he does an exceptional job of taking the back. He does an exceptional job of moving positions to really advantageous ones and sinking in that choke quick. So I think we're going to see Cody Durden really outmatched on the feet here. And if he does try to get that wrestling going, look for him as he gets more and more tired to make a mistake that Bruno Silva can capitalize on.
Dan, it's one of my favorite plays on the board, so it always makes me feel better when you and I are in cahoots here on that one. I love that side for Bruno Silva. I'm curious what you think of Brad Tavares against the Iron Turtle as we have Jung Young Park back in there. I hate to go against the Iron Turtle here, but do you think that Tavares might be live as a dog?
I do think he's live as a dog. I think that's why we're seeing his number shrink down as it gets closer to fight time. I think this is one of those fights that regardless of what side you're on, within 2 minutes of the fight, you might wind up finding yourself feeling really stupid. because if Jung Young Park can get the takedown and he can get it consecutively, or he can get it, you know, with fidelity here, I think he wins this fight super easily, right? If he can regularly score takedowns, he can regularly rack up control time. I think he wins this fight and he doesn't even break a sweat. if he starts failing on those takedowns, Brad Tavares is definitely the better striker. He's definitely faster. So if you're looking at the board from a value perspective, it's hard to say we just need Brad Tavares to stuff a couple of takedowns here and get, like, you know, plus 136 on it. There's certainly value there. I would say that if you're looking for Jong Yong Park and you like that side, the real move for me, and it's maybe my sleeper play of the week, is to get in on Jong Yong Park by submission.
Oh,
it sounds like a crazy one because Brad Tavares has not been submitted, I don't think ever, if I'm not mistaken. But Jong Yong Park's last three wins have all come by rear naked choke. Granted, a lot worse competition than Brad Tavares. You know, Dennis Toy Luyuin is no Brad Tavares, but he's got three wins in a row by rear naked choke, and it's plus 900 right now for him to go and get a fourth one. I mean, if you're going to play that side, yeah, maybe he grinds him out to a boring decision, but I think the real value there is on the Jong Yong Park, the Iron Turtle submission line.
So, Dan, circling back to that Silva play that you love and you seem to think that there's a lot of value on, that's the men's flyweight bout. Over in the women's flyweight division, is there any value in that one between Maverick and Barbosa, or are you going to flip the script on this one a little bit, and instead of going for the value play, are you going to ride with a favorite on this one?
I mean, I think the favorite has still got tremendous value here, too. When I saw that Dion Barbosa was going to be the fill-in for Tracy Cortez in this fight, first of all, you automatically give a little bit of a fade to short-notice fighters. Mm-hmm. They're not winning a large percentage of the time. It's only like 38% historically. And so then when you add in the fact that she's not prepared for somebody with the strength of Miranda Maverick. Look, Miranda Maverick, you know, a lot of people touted her as being this high prospect that was going to run up the division, and maybe a little bit of that shine's come off, right? Like, if she's only negative 200 or negative 205 up against Dion Barbosa on short notice, clearly some of that shine's gone. But her losses are to Erin Blanchfield and Jasmine Jesuta-Vicius. Like, those are no slouches there. Those are really tough losses, and women who do an exceptional job of stuffing the takedown. And I just don't think Dion Barbosa is the same kind of fighter in that way. She herself kind of needs that top control time. She sort of needs that top jiu-jitsu control in order to win fights. And I don't think she's going to have any chance of having that against a wrestler like Miranda Maverick. Now, of course, Maverick's size comes into play here. Barbosa has fought up at bantamweight. You know, Maverick's only 5'3". She's very small. But I still think that's going to be easier for her to get in on the legs. You're going to see her dominate with the wrestling, hit three or four takedowns here, and win this one by decision.
All right, Dan, the first fight of the night, it's the other Usman, not Kamaru, that's going to be out there in the heavyweight division here when Muhammad's going to be back out there against Thomas Peterson. And look, we know what the issues are with bigger version of Usman, right? It's sometimes it's that cardio. It is juiced heavily to the over 2.5, minus 210. Does that pose a problem for Usman if this fight goes deep into the night?
Yeah, I think it does, 100%. Because Thomas Peterson, you know, he was a highly touted prospect in his own right. He was an LFA champion. He's a guy who regularly gets tons of takedowns, beats up his opponent, ground and pound finishes. He did get a submission on Contender Series, but I think that was kind of an anomaly. And, like, he's got good ground and pound. And I don't know how Muhammad Usman got the nickname The Motor. That's one of the wildest nicknames I've ever heard in my whole life. Because, as you mentioned, it's wild that this guy runs out of gas as frequently as he does.
Oh, man.
And up against a guy with wrestling like Thomas Peterson, as long as Peterson gets to that wrestling early, right, I think he's going to wear down Usman. I mean, to your point, I can't believe it's heavily juiced to the over. I like the under in this play. I like Thomas Peterson KO props, like TKO exhaustion. You know, like it would shock me to see, you know, Muhammad Usman just not answering punches 3 minutes into the second round. I like either of those plays here, and both of them you're getting pretty solid plus money on.
Plus $1.60 for the under 2.5. I love that play because, again, if Usman gets him out of there, it's probably going to be early. And I'm with you. If Peterson gets the wrestling, we might have a small upset here. Peterson, by the way, is plus $1.10. You know, I love Boom Kelleher, but Brian's seen better days inside that octagon. We know that. Any shot against Cody Gibson? We know Cody's more of a volume guy. He's a $2 betting favorite here. The comeback on Boom is plus $1.70. Any shot for the elder statesman in there to get it done?
I really don't think so.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if you look at Cody Gibson's last two fights, and granted, he did lose both of them, they're to a much higher level of competition to, Brian Kelleher, at least where Brian Kelleher is now in his career, right? He lost to Brad Katona on the tough finale, mostly just by like not being able to control some of the positions late in the fight and eventually giving away that late round. And then with Miles Johns, again, a really good grappler. And that's kind of what it takes to beat this version of Cody Gibson. He's very big for the division. Mm-hmm. His boxing obviously hung up really well against Brad Katona. And I think that in this fight, you know, what Brian Kelleher has to do is he's got to get him out of there early, because he's just a guy who at this stage is not taking damage particularly well. He is a guy who's getting hit and he's looking wobbly. He is a guy who's getting taken down and he's giving up his neck. And, you know, to your point, you know, maybe Cody Gibson's a little bit more of a volume striker, but some of those things he was landing on Brad Katona, I mean, were pretty heavy in my eyes. In being such a bigger guy than Brian Kelleher, I think all of that bodes really badly for Boom. As much as a fan as I am of his career in general, I think we're at the tail end of it right here.
Dan, we touched on one women's flyweight bout already. I want to look to the other one. What's the play that you love in Carolina's fight?
Oh, I love Luana Carolina in this fight. I used to be a big Lucy Pudilova fan, and no offense to kind of where her career is gone, but like, you know, she just looks like she's unable to get the best parts of her game going. You know, like what we liked from her in her first stint in the UFC was that she was violent. She'd go in there and throw down. She'd make it messy. And now she kind of gets in the clinch and she seems a little hesitant, or she gets outworked in the clinch. And that's really always where she's done her best work, is in super close range and in the clinch. And now she just happens to be fighting somebody who I think is far better in a lot of those ways, right? Luana Carolina. You don't want to be in the clinch with Luana Carolina. She throws knees to the body really well. She throws nice elbows on the inside. You don't really want to be in striking range. You want to turn her fight into a slow grappling match, right? That's how Ariane Lipsky wound up beating her. And instead, I don't think Lucy Pudilova is capable of winning that kind of fight. Even coming back down to 125 pounds, I don't think this is a fight where she can sort of size bully Luana Carolina. She's also really big. She stuffed takedowns from Lupita Godinez. If she's going to stuff those takedowns, I don't know that Lucy's got all that much of a hope in turning it into that kind of fight. So I like Luana Carolina quite a bit on the feet here.
Only about 30 seconds ago, Dan, we're going back over to the O2 next week main event. We got Leon Rocky Edwards defending against, remember the name, Bilal Muhammad, Chicago's finest. Potentially, do you see an upset happening?
I do see an upset happening here. I love Bilal Muhammad in this spot. I know obviously the first fight we were kind of, we didn't really get to see much and it looked like Liam was getting the best of him. But look, what we've seen in improvements from Bilal Muhammad lately is insane. Hands are going, power's coming around, wrestling's happening. I see the upset coming.
And new might be happening next week. Dan, you're the best. Thanks for hopping on the Progressive Guest Line. We'll catch up again soon, my friend.
Thanks, Dan.
Great stuff, as always, from Dan Vreeland. When we come back, let's talk a little bit more Major League Baseball. That is next here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
You wake up, you make some coffee, you check out VSiN.com. Make it part of your daily routine to get your best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state. They vary across the country. Betting tools, betting guides, they are there for you each and every day at VSiN.com. Back alongside Joe Serralo, Dave Ross here as we continue from the D in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. We were talking about stages of grief. Because I'm older and we're both Met fans, I got more scar tissue. Like, I am old enough to have enjoyed 1986.
Wow.
And winning that championship as a high schooler. And it still has, all these years later, it's galvanized me against bad Met losses in the postseason.
You might want to kill me for this. Have you lived through both World Series?
I was born in 69.
Before the World Series?
Well, October 26th. So I'd have to go back and
look. That's your birthday?
Yeah.
You and my sister have the same birthday. That's awesome.
I'd have to go back and take a look. When did the Mets actually clinch the 1969 World Series? Could have coincided.
It was five games, right?
Yeah. It's very close to my birthday. It would make a lot of sense why I am the way I am, right? So maybe the stages of grief are not as bad for me. Because people are like, oh, that must suck being a Met fan. I'm like, no. Like, I don't get to claim 69 because
right.
I was zero, or maybe just barely.
October 16th.
Ah!
Wow, things were so much earlier. They were done so much earlier back then.
Which, by the way, is my mom's birthday. And then 10 days later, here I come.
Oh, so, there you go.
But I think Dodger fans somehow feel like, even though they got the COVID chip, they feel like they haven't won it enough.
Yeah, that was a Mickey Mouse World Series.
Yeah, that doesn't count, does it?
The Lakers in the bubble.
Do they count that in L.A.? You know California. I mean, is that like a big, like they're all, yeah,
they
beat our chest about the 2020.
They do count it.
They do.
They think the Dodgers are God's gift to the world. No, I don't count that. 60-game regular season, that's a sprint, not a marathon. What's the Dodgers' problem? They can't last 170 games. That's their problem. So don't tell me what they did in a 60-game season.
Yeah, yeah. That NLCS when the Braves blew a 3-1 series lead to the Dodgers, that didn't count at all.
Big asterisk, L.A. LeBron gets it. Dodgers get it as well.
Don't forget, we almost had a 3-0 comeback.
That was the Astros. The Rays
were up 3-0.
That's right.
That was wild.
So the Dodgers this year for stages of grief for their elimination, could you imagine if they missed the playoffs? It's not going to happen. 25-1. If you really think somehow it's going to be a complete collapse. Now, look.
That would be great.
They do have issues. I mean, like, I thought that before the year, the Braves, and we saw those win totals over 100, right? For the Braves and the Dodgers, they look like super teams. They did look like all-star teams. And you went, they're almost like the Titanic, right? The ship that can't sink. And then you see the injuries both those teams have had, and they've taken on water. Now, I don't know that the hull is going all the way down to crush the ship, but if the Dodgers are going to make moves before the trade deadline, right, Joe? So we have to take that into factor. I don't know what those moves exactly will look like. Max Scherzer again.
They're in on Garrett Crochet.
There you go. So they're looking for a big-time Hessian to get them some hired help to help win this war. Now, go ahead, Wyatt.
Well, I was going
to
say, so you know how the Dodgers, everybody's hurt. They need all these players. I saw somebody tweet out that Scooble would be a great pickup for them. And somebody quote tweeting is like, oh, so your $1.3 billion you spent in the offseason isn't enough?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you do when you're just the cap be damned and you just say, hey, we're going to buy, and we're going to get that ring. I mean, when you've made the investments they already have, it does seem kind of foolish to not make more investments now. Because you're pot committed.
What's crazy is we're talking about Garrett Crochet and Tarek Skubal, and it's like, what do the Dodgers have? In a perfect world, if they were healthy, you've got Tony Gonsolin, Dustin May, Walker Buehler, Clayton Kershaw, Bobby Miller, who I just can't figure out how he's not good with the stuff he possesses, Gavin Stone, Tyler Glass now.
It's an
Yamamoto.
Embarrassment.
It's an embarrassment
of riches.
And then Shohei's got to come back.
They've got two full rotations, and they can't keep it.
And they need more. That's the crazy part.
They don't have enough. Forget a regular season five-manner. They don't have enough for a short series rotation right now. It's nuts.
Insane. So to lose in the wild card round, by the way, it seems preposterous that they wouldn't win the division.
Right, they should have the bye.
So we would think they would get the bye and would not be eligible for that. That's why it's plus 850.
Imagine if Milwaukee stole the bye from them.
Oh, my God.
And we got Dodgers, Pirates, and a 3-6 seed, and Skeens goes out there and puts the Pirates up 1-0.
Let's go Pittsburgh. Now, here's where it gets interesting. To lose in the divisional series, wasn't that your claim?
Yes.
That's what you thought would happen.
That price stinks. Everyone's thinking like me, apparently.
Plus $1.75. Okay, to get to the LCS but lose it, you can get 3-1. To get to the World Series and lose it, you can get 5-1. If you think they can win the whole damn thing, you can get plus money. Not great plus money, but you can get over $3 if you think the Dodgers can win the World Series, and there's no stage of grief and or elimination.
None of these are good enough numbers for me to play. Mm. I mean, all of those, like, I hate those. I detest those numbers because I don't think they make it to the World Series. But I'm not even confident to say that they make it to the LCS, and that's only 3-1. Like, my favorite play in terms of just a prediction and not an actual bet is the Dodgers to lose in the divisional series. But at less than 2-1, that's a terrible number. There is no value with that number at all. So there's nothing to play here, in my opinion, when it comes to the Dodgers.
I tend to agree. I don't find any playable numbers that we just look at and go, yeah, that's good value there. Because, again, we know they're going to get more, we believe, arms before the trade deadline here in a couple weeks. Let's get over to the American League. Let's talk about the evil empire, New York Yankees, the other pinstripes in New York City. Don't like them very much. But again, this is another team that you look at and you go, well, they're it's certainly not a lock when you're a game down to Baltimore to win the AL East. To miss the postseason completely, 20-1. We've seen the Yankees last year, second half collapse. I mean, this has happened to them.
So many
in
things would need to happen, though. Like, so many teams that have incredibly gigantic question marks would have to jump them. The Red Sox, the Royals, and probably the Mariners.
Minnesota, maybe.
Well, they're making the play. I already account for Minnesota to get a wild card spot. So you're talking about two others. and you're talking about the Royals, Sox, and Mariners, or Astros. I don't want to discount the Mariners for the division, but like, that's a lot of teams to jump the Yankees. I think they're going to the playoffs.
So to lose in the wild card round as a wild card, if the Orioles do in fact win the AL East, look at that, almost get 4-1, that they go out early. Now look.
In a 4-5?
Yeah. I mean, Gerrit Cole's your ace. You hope he's still healthy.
But if they get
good.
Minnesota, does them being 6-0 against Minnesota this year and
Minnesota
having,
can't beat them. Minnesota just cannot beat the Yankees.
I'm going to look up the Yankees record.
It's insane.
In my lifetime. Since June 19th, 98, I'm going to look that up.
While you're looking that up, you look at these other numbers. If they can get out of the wild card series, losing the divisional round, hey, maybe they win the division. They're already in the divisional series, potentially. That'd be plus $1.65. That could be a one and done scenario, right? You win the East, but then you have too much rest. We've talked about that.
Right.
Who does it really help? To get to the LCS and lose, plus +370. To get to the series and lose, 6-1. And then all those long-suffering Yankee fans, to win it all, plus +550. Any playable numbers in your estimation?
Nothing is that playable because I have a lot of conviction that the Yankees are going to lose, similarly to the Dodgers, in the divisional round. Mm. And the books seem to be in sync with me on that one. Dodgers plus +175, Yanks plus +165. Those aren't good enough numbers for me to make a play that specific because that's what I really think. Whether they are the one seed or the four seed, I think the Yankees lose in the divisional round. Although I will say if they're the one seed, that means that they get incredibly hot down the stretch here. And then maybe they don't losing the divisional round because that means that something clicks, whether it's their lineup's deeper or their starting pitching is better because those guys have almost entirely regressed from April. That would mean something clicked. But I think the most realistic path, what I'm calling for here is a four seed, probably winning the first round and then going out in the ALDS.
Here's the way I look at the Yanks is, you know, back in the day when George was running the operation, a guy like Brian Cashman wouldn't have to think twice about, hey, boss, can I spend some money? Because
right.
The answer was always yes.
Right.
Now it's been like last, you got to work on a budget, which is insane. Look, Soto, we don't know what's going to happen with Juan next year. I know across town, the Metropolitan fans feel like that's what Uncle Steve is saving for.
I'm not as confident as many people are.
Well, then my question would be this. If Soto is on the move at the end of the year for the Yankees, if he's really just a rental, then don't you have to go all in now while you have Juan Soto?
You would think, unless they're really cocky and they think he's a sure thing to come back. I think Juan Soto is going to be in New York next year.
Yeah, we just
it's
don't
just
know.
It's just a matter of which team. I think
That's
he
right.
loves New York. You know, I mean, it is true. Dominican guys love New York.
They do.
You feel more, you know, there was all the question about Shohei Ohtani, right? When he was coming over from Japan, like where he'd feel comfortable. What place has more Dominicans than New York? You know, I mean, they do tend to feel comfortable there. Jose Reyes was on top of the town, you know?
Well, you want a Cespedes when he his walk-up music. I mean,
Cespedes is Cuban.
He's Cuban. That's correct. But, like, we just, it seems like in New York City, that is a good spot.
Absolutely.
So I think Soto would want to be there one way or the other, whether it's the Mets or the Yankees.
I think it's coming down to those two. By the way, really quick, the Yankees, since June 19th, 1998, against Minnesota, they've played 180 games. 123-57.
I just don't want to see that for the Twins. I do not want to see that matchup.
What is that winning percentage? I mean, it's more than a full season. 123. That's a .683 winning percentage.
Win
My
Twins,
goodness.
Except when they play the Yankees. That's when they do not win in the Twin Cities.
Wild.
Okay, when we come back to begin hour number three, we're going to switch our attention a little bit and get back to some NFL talk, maybe the number one seeds in the AFC and some numbers associated there. And, of course, we'll do the NFC as well. That is hour number three coming up here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Back here on Sharp Money, Dave Ross, Joe Serralo coming at you from the D in fabulous downtown Las Vegas. What a pleasure to welcome back to the program. Aaron Halterman does a great job at RacingDudes.com. Follow him on X at Racing_Dudes. Joins us now in the Progressive Guest Line to talk all things Big 12. Aaron, we were kind of kidding during the break. It's every time you look at these new super divisions, right? You try to figure out, okay, wait, what team is in what division now and what conference here? And then you look and you see Utah as a new addition, and Cam Rising is still there here, Aaron. They have the highest win total along with K-State at 9.5. Walking into the Big 12, do you think that that number is appropriately set? It's actually juiced to the over at minus $1.35.
Yeah, I mean, let's kick it off right here with the newcomers to the league, right? And this is the big newcomer, in my opinion, to the league this year, them in Arizona. Utah over 9.5. That's one of my stronger plays, actually, in the Big 12 this season. And look, you said it, Cam Rising for the 7th season. Here he comes back once again. And look, guys, I really think you look at the Utah team 2 years ago when Cam Rising was healthy. Wow, they were a really good football team, especially towards the end of the season when he really got his feet under him. They looked fantastic. They beat up on USC in the Pac-12 championship game that year. Now, fast forward to last year, they were a disaster offensively without him. It was a rotation at quarterback, and neither one of them were very good. But you get Cam Rising back. You've got 9 back on the defensive side of the ball, 9 guys that were very good last season. The record wasn't great, but that defense was great last season. You know Whittingham's always going to have a really physical team there in Utah. And I think, you know, with Oklahoma, Texas gone, and the teams that are left in the Big 12 and the teams that have come in, Utah might be the most physical team in this conference now. Yeah. They may be able to bully some teams around now. I really like the Utah team this year.
Yeah, Aaron, I love that handicap of Utah. Bizarre, Cam Rising, I'm 11 months older than him, and I graduated college over 4 years ago, and he's still out there. Just a rising senior, some might say. I want to stick with the theme of Pac-12 turned Big 12 teams and look at the Arizona Wildcats because, man, they've got something special with quarterback Noah Fifita and then McMillan, the receiver, one of the best air attacks in college football, and I'm kind of surprised that their win total, after rattling off 10 a year ago, is just 8 on DraftKings, 7.5 some places. I'm intrigued by this number of 8 plus money with the over. What do you think about Arizona's inaugural Big 12 campaign?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with how you broke it down there. I think 7.5 or 8 wins, that's pretty crazy for Arizona. Now, they're kind of the opposite of Utah. They're not going to ground and pound you, but man, they, like you said, they are electric offensively. They've got 7 guys back offensively, plus the quarterback that you mentioned, and he is fantastic. They've also returned 7 on defense. I know they've lost the head coach, but I think the replacement's going to be okay. I think they're just going to pick up right where they left off last year. So I'm going over Arizona 7.5 here. Also, you kind of look at some of their tougher games. Yeah, they do have tough games on the road at K-State, at Utah, at Central Florida, and at TCU. But all of their home games, guys, are very winnable. So if they've got 7 games at home, they should win all 7 of them. And we're talking about winning one of those games that I listed off on the road. They also have BYU mentioned, I forgot to mention about them on the road. You got to win 1 out of those 5 to get to this win total. Guys, I think they might win 2 or 3 out of those 5 that I just mentioned. So I think this was a no-brainer for me. Arizona over 7.5. I think they'll fit fine in the Big 12. Offensively, they're pretty similar to what everybody else does in the Big 12. So I think it's going to be a real good fit for the Wildcats.
Aaron, you mentioned that Utah might be the most physical defensive football team that they have in the conference this year. That normally goes to Mike Gundy in Oklahoma State with his defense. He raised some eyebrows with some of his comments at Big 12 Media Days. Their win total is sitting at 8. What do you make of Gundy, this team? Because I think some people, it feels like a wide variance that it could really be a disaster or they might be really, really good.
It's a grab bag. I stayed away from it as far as betting, but I can speak on Mike Gundy a lot. I told you guys right before we got on air, I'm a big Oklahoma Sooner fan. With that being said, I know a lot about what goes on in Stillwater at Oklahoma State. Mike Gundy has said this kind of stuff for years. Maybe not this extreme with the whole driving drunk comment. That was pretty crazy.
That was an eyebrow raiser right there.
Yeah, I mean, there's the I'm a man, I'm 40 thing, which was funny. And then there's the DWI thing, which is like, yeah, that's not that funny, dude. But anyway, he's a weird guy. That's the best way I can. He's just eccentric. He always has been. He does not care what he says ever. And that's evident. Their teams, I guarantee you, they will beat somebody they shouldn't, and then they will lose to somebody they shouldn't. And that's why it's kind of always hard to gauge what they're going to do from a win total perspective. If I had to take it, I would take them over 8 right now. They have a lot of guys returning, and I think that's the big thing. Offensively, they've got Ollie Gordon back, plus a lot of other guys back on offense and defense both. I would take them over, but I'm a little bit scared. They're always kind of a schizophrenic team week to week.
Yeah, it's going to be intriguing to see what they do out there. Sticking with, you know, an OG Big 12 team, Kansas State. Of all the returning Big 12 teams, they've got the most love, just a hair behind Utah in the Big 12 preseason media poll. But they lose their quarterback, Will Howard. So, I don't know. I seem more concerned than most about Kansas State. I don't love the over on their win total. It's 9, 9.5, depending on where you shop. What do you think about it? Are you higher on the Wildcats than me?
Yeah, I actually am high on the Wildcats here. I love Klieman, the head coach. He always brings a physical brand of football. And I think that, you know, 8 returning starters on defense, they're going to be pretty good defensively. You talked about it. It's a weird situation at quarterback, right? Will Howard's gone. He might start for the team that wins the national championship this year in Ohio State. I mean, they're loaded. Will Howard goes there, and Kansas State says, yeah, go away, because we've got a guy named Avery Johnson who we really liked towards the end of last year and actually started him towards the end of last year. So with Avery Johnson, is he going to be the great quarterback that they think he is? Because they kind of told Will Howard take a hike, which is really weird. And now he, like I said, ends up in Ohio State. So the Avery Johnson situation is interesting. He is a dynamic runner. And I think that mobility really fits what Klieman wants to do offensively. I also think K-State schedule-wise, most of their tough games are at home. Arizona, yeah. Oklahoma State, Kansas, all at home. They do have to go to Ames. So that'll be tough. But because of the schedule, I went K-State over 9.
Aaron, I think it's in the new Big 12 bylaws that I have to ask you a question about Colorado and Deion Sanders. What do you make of year 2 of Coach Prime? 5.5 is where this thing is set at. I have no idea of what to make of year 2 in Boulder.
You and me both. I totally stayed away from it. I mean, I could see a world where they're 6-6. I think that it would, which would put you over, which would cash the bet. So I mean, again, if I had to do it, I think I would take the over. This thing kind of started to be a disaster last year towards the end of that season, as everybody saw it unfold. They kind of got overhyped beating a TCU team early that wasn't all that good. Look, I think they'll be a little bit better. I think he's got the defensive and offensive lines a little bit better, which were, that was just the huge, huge problem last year. They had the skill guys. They didn't have the guys up front. I expect a little bit of progression, but I was a little bit scared to bet it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm looking at that schedule right now. That looks like a tougher schedule than Kansas State's. I wouldn't be shocked Colorado went 4-8 this year. Woo! When you look further down the Big 12 a little bit, there's a play with Central Florida. I don't know what to think of this team. I think I'm a little lower on them than most are. What are your thoughts on the Knights?
I'm with you. I'm low on them as well. Their total sits at 7.5. I went the under on Central Florida at 7.5. You know, guys, Gus Malzahn, I'm not a big believer in him, to be honest. When they hired him at Central Florida, I thought things would go pretty well. I think it's been pretty underwhelming so far for him. Now, I know last year they had to switch to the Big 12, and that is an adjustment without any doubt. However, the couple of years before, they really kind of went backwards as well, even when they were in the smaller conference. So it's kind of I'm not sure. They bring in KJ Jefferson at quarterback from Arkansas. I'm not sure he really progressed from the first year he started till now. I didn't really see it at Arkansas. They kind of went backwards. This schedule is really tough as well. They've got a non-conference game at Florida. I think that'll be tough for them. At TCU, at Iowa State, at West Virginia. They have Utah at home, but still, like I said, I'm high on Utah, so I think that'll be a tough game. They also host Arizona at home, and I'm high on Arizona as well. So the mixture of, I think, one of the toughest schedules in the Big 12, and the fact that I'm just not totally sold on the direction of the program, I think under 7.5 is the play for Central Florida.
Aaron, got about a minute to go. Let's do a little Game of Thrones, Battle of the Bastards, the worst 3 teams, at least with the win totals here in the conference. You got Arizona State at 4.5. It's juiced to the under. BYU 4.5, juiced to the under. And then Houston 3.5. You can get plus money, plus $1.35 if you want to go under 3.5. Out of those 3, which under would you play?
I think Arizona State has to be the one. I think Houston, new coach, they're going to be better. BYU, it's tough to go out there and win. I think they'll win a couple games. Maybe they shouldn't. At home, Arizona State. I would have to go under 4.5. I'm the least confident, I think, in them. They've got in my opinion, a major rebuilding job there.
Forks down for Arizona State. Aaron, really appreciate you joining the program here on the Progressive Guest Line. Great breakdown of the Big 12. Can't wait to talk college football with you more.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Great stuff right there. So check them out again on X at racing_dudes. Joe, when we come back, the big reveal.
Baby. I can't wait.
Our top five. Will there be any sports movies on our list?
That will I be speaking Italian?
I hope so. That's next year in Sharp Money.